This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
And I'm here with It's a Fandom Thing's Aaron Marlowe. Hello, Aaron.
Hello, Eric.
I'm here with The Motion's Faye OJ. Hi, Faye.
Hi, Eric. Hi, everyone.
And Wizard Radio Station's Ashley Styles. Hello, Ashley.
Hey, Eric. Hey, everyone.
We are here to talk about everything happening in our worlds this week, so I'm going to start it out. How are you guys? Faye, what's going on with you?
I am good. I'm a bit stressed. You know, one of those weeks where everything just piles up and you don't have any time to process it. So it just hits you all at once at the end of the week. But I'm coming out of it and I'm really excited to be talking to you guys.
We in America call that the Sunday scaries. I don't know if you have that term over in the UK, but that's what we call it. Ashley, how about you? What's going on with you? How's your week?
I'm doing good. Week's been all right. Yeah, this is pretty standard sort of week, but I'm looking forward to this. I got a double bill in, so I'm on after this as well. So I'm ready to go.
Busy. All right. And Aaron, how about you? What's new? What's happening in your neck of the woods?
I'm good too. Really good, but really busy. It's been an overwhelming year. Lots of changes. But I had a busy day yesterday, recorded two episodes yesterday, recording this, then have like a episode meeting tonight. So just busy.
Never a dull moment in the life of a podcaster. I like to say it's been such a busy year. It's also March. So let's talk about some of this pop culture stuff that's going on, both pop culture and news. I know, Aaron, you wanted to talk a little bit about the potential TikTok ban that is being discussed right now in the U.S. Senate. I don't know, over our UK folks, are you guys aware of this? Are you aware of what's happening? Is it kind of entering your frame of reference?
A little bit, but I feel like with the US, there's always something going on. So,
speak on it, Faye. Try living here.
Another thing.
What about you, Ashley? Is this something that you're aware of?
I'm quite aware, but then I do an international relations news show, so I'm pretty abreast of that sort of thing. It's maybe not for like the sort of average person. Well, I will have heard of it, sure. Yeah, it's been in the cycle, but maybe not the details, not the nitty gritty.
So, Aaron, why don't you, for the listeners in the UK who may not be aware of what this is all going on, can you explain to them the just, how do we put this, just complete and utter nonsense that is happening right now with this issue in our government?
Yeah, the complete and utter nonsense is the perfect way to put it. So the House passed, about a week or so ago, and they passed it really quickly. A bill basically saying that if the company that owns TikTok, if they don't divest some of it to an American company, and it's very, very important to stress that it's a Chinese company, so it comes in, you know, there's a lot of different little things going on with that. And so if they don't divest some of the interest in the company to someone in America or to the United States, then they will ban TikTok here. And they're doing it under the guise of protecting America. Like, there's even like this stupid name for it, like protecting Americans, and, you know, because of the spy thing, which, yeah. I mean, all of our software, our phones are spying on us right now. Yeah. Whatever we're talking about, you're going to find it as a, like, pop-up ads. So it's so ridiculous. So ridiculous.
Do you think it's actually going to get passed by the Senate? Do you think we actually may have a situation where that could happen?
I do. I'm a big pessimist. So there's a big part of me that thinks it could happen. And President Biden has already said he'll sign it. So it's not like he's opposed to it. And that's the thing is what's so interesting about this is it's like an across the aisle thing. Like both Democrats and Republicans are all in favor of it. So it's not something that like one political party is more in favor of than the other. And I think that's what's so scary about this, because and the fact that they passed it so quickly when they can't pass other things that might actually help us a lot more.
Yeah.
Is ridiculous.
That's such a great point, because I don't know if our British, I guess, cousins, we'll call you all, are aware of how gridlocked our legislative process is. Like, we cannot do anything, literally anything, in this country to actually improve the lives of its people, because there's always some reason that it's not popular. We can't get bipartisan support. When it comes to banning an app in which people do dances and share recipes, that's apparently a public crisis. So I would love to turn it over to our British cousins and give you an opportunity to read the Americans for filth. Ashley, would you go first?
Oh, you want me? Okay, well,
bring
it
on.
You want to talk about a bill that's got bipartisan support, you know? This one does already for such a relatively minor issue, and even within the context of, okay, so a bill with bipartisan support's getting passed through House and Senate, Marjorie Taylor Greene already wants to remove the Speaker of the House over some other stuff. But it's like, even when your two main political parties agree with things, they can't agree with things.
Right. It's so true. So, Faye, were you going to say something? Yeah, please.
I guess it's a bit of on the other side, but I guess I wanted to ask you both, if this bill does get passed, what will you miss most about TikTok? What is one thing that you rely on TikTok for?
Oh, I'm going to let Aaron go first while I think about, because I know my initial answer, frankly, was the thirst TikToks from very attractive menses, but I don't know if that's an appropriate thing to say.
That's appropriate. Yes. I will miss those Dean Winchester from Supernatural thirst. I will miss, honestly, the political side of it, because I think you get from TikTok, and I think this is part of the reason they want to ban it, honestly, I think you get from TikTok a lot of more honest coverage of a lot of stuff going on that the mainstream media on both sides will not cover. Mm-hmm. And so that is honestly what I will miss the most. I mean, I love the other stuff and the fun videos and the cute dogs and all of that, but I will miss that part the most.
I also think, piggybacking on it, I don't think it's a coincidence that this is happening so quickly in an election year, because specifically what TikTok is doing is it's a communication tool for especially younger voters. It's disseminating information, and some of that information is not always vetted, right? Some of that information is, in fact, misinformation. But I do think there is going to be a very deliberate movement upon the parts of some people, we'll just say, to minimize the voice of the younger voter and try to tamp them down. I know that sounds very conspiratorial, but Aaron, do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, completely. Completely agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scary.
I think it's interesting that you say that, because when we look at the last election, what year were we in? When 2024. So this would have been about 2016 with Trump and with Facebook, and how people were saying that, you know, that was sort of manipulated to suit Trump's agenda. Now, you know, we have something that has the effect, like the potential to do the opposite, and they're trying to shut it down. And as you said, they're shutting it down so quickly. But I want to give props to you Americans, because I think that what you do is, because everything's just so open there and quite blunt, I think you reveal, not you guys personally, but reveal a lot of what a lot of people are thinking in other places. So I look at the UK, and we like to think that we're a lot better, we're a bit more progressive. And looking, when you look at the way that politics is, when you look at the way that things are handled, we're not more progressive at all. We're just a bit more fake and a bit more polite, in inverted commas. So we're not going to say some of the things that Americans will. And I think that we need you guys to keep doing what you're doing, so that we can actually see what a lot of the world is thinking, but they get to hide under more progressive politics.
I thank you so much for that. I will say, I think the UK is better. And I also think that you just sound so much more erudite when you say it all. So keep doing you. Ashley, you run an international affairs podcast. Any of the thoughts on this subject?
Yeah. First of all, if you think we sound more erudite, go to where my dad's from in Coventry and then tell me we sound more erudite. That's just where his side of the family's from. But in terms of like the band, what I would say is, I guess more or less TikTok is, its user base is predominantly young. So on balance, that's sort of a pro-Democrat thing. But I think it's sort of interesting in the way that TikTok is disseminated, I think far enough that it's not like this is exclusively a Republican move to sort of target Democrats in an election year. It's definitely election policy because it's easy to pass, bipartisan support. For Biden, it's a red meat thing of, look, I've done a thing. For the Republicans, yep, they've got like appeal to the older voter base. But I think in terms of how it will actually affect information dissemination, I don't think that a TikTok ban would be as consequential for this election as, say, for example, the way that Obama in 2008 leveraged Facebook, mm-hmm, and when that was nascent, when that was like coming up as a big social media driver of like votes. I think it's not, I don't think it's quite the same, because at least in the UK, a mate of mine is a teacher at like relatively young schools, and he says that, this is just anecdotal evidence, but he said that like a lot of the Andrew Tate videos and stuff and the far right content that comes through on TikTok, it's actually bizarrely widespread in terms of what you actually get from TikTok and what it does and doesn't moderate. So I think in terms of how this will affect like electoral politics, I think this is more just both parties want to be able to say, ah, oh, look how strong we are against China. Look how strong we are against, you know, big business. This is like air quotes antitrust legislation or whatever. We want to try and divest this company. So that's where I think this is coming from, rather than a specifically partisan thing, given that there are other things that are so obviously partisan that are currently moving through the House and the Senate.
Yeah, great points. Did you have anything else to add, Aaron, or should we move on to the other topic about technology coming to destroy us, which is the AI controversy happening with Late Night with the Devil?
Just quickly off of piggybacking off of that, with the TikTok ban, I do agree. I think it also comes down to capitalism, because I mean, that's what we're all about here. And capitalism can be the root of all the problems really in this country. And so I think that's another part of it, because they want to be able to make money off of this.
Sure.
App. So,
yep.
Yeah.
If someone's going to make money off of it, it better be Americans. That's what is. Go USA. Yeah. That being said, let's talk a little bit about this AI controversy. Aaron, this was your kind of talking point. Do you want to walk people through what the kind of brouhaha is about this?
Yeah, so there's this new independent horror movie called Late Night with the Devil, and it's supposed to be like, you know, it's been getting rave reviews. I think it's got a really high score on Rotten Tomatoes. It's been called like the best horror movie of the year so far. I'm a huge horror person. If you're watching any kind of video of this later, any clips, I don't know if it'll show up, but in my background here, people here can probably see I have like a poster of the three slasher icons, Michael and Jason and Freddy. And so that's like my favorite genre. And so independent horror is usually like, I think, you know, they can take a lot more chances sometimes. However, with this movie, it recently came to light that there are three images that were used with AI. They did some editing later, but it was AI generated images. And someone who was watching the film found out, and they actually left like a letterbox review and said, I would love this movie except for this. And so then there was a call for a ban on the movie. People didn't want to go. And so it's a very complex issue with this one, because this movie was made before the strikes happened. And a lot of people are saying, well, this is a small independent movie, so we shouldn't come after this movie because they don't have as much money. And people are saying, you know, why don't you go after like Marvel and other big, huge ones that have done this? So it's very complicated. And I have such mixed emotions, because AI, it's like such a slippery slope. If you're like, okay, I'm just going to allow these three, then it can just build up and build up. But at the same time, it's like, well, it is just three and they didn't do more than that. So it's, I'm still really mixed on it. But it's disappointing to me, because I was really excited about this movie, and now it's got this kind of sour taste to it. So,
And not the good kind of sour taste, like Skittles. Faye, do you have any thoughts on AI and entertainment and kind of this moment that we're in, we're kind of reckoning with it already?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts, because this is the space that I work in. So I am a prototyping architect, and that just means I work with different companies helping them implement new solutions. And I did work with a sort of media company, obviously, won't give too much details, but they were looking at implementing some AI solutions to do some of the things that they were doing, like transcription and translation, and seeing if an AI can do that better than a human. My main thought with AI and generative AI is that when you work with it, you realize they're not as smart as the people think they are. They were made by humans at the end of the day, so they're not going to be smarter than humans. I think that if we're looking at, you know, human intellect as something to be afraid of, like, I think a lot of people are still lacking common sense.
Amen.
Makes sense. So just, I don't think it's anything to be scared of, really. I think there's still like a lot of work to do, and I feel like we're definitely limited by the fact that it's made by humans. At the same time, media, Hollywood is going through a really difficult time, and we saw that with the strikes. We see that with, you know, something else I want to speak about, where we're looking back at how these old studios were ran, and we're seeing that there was a lot of really messed up stuff. And I think that because you know, we're at the, I don't think AI should be used to replace jobs. I think it should be used to enhance jobs. And I think that if your job can be replaced by AI, you know, were you really doing a good job in the first place? That's debatable. But I think we need to really listen to the people who are working in these industries. And instead of, you know, making it computer versus the person, see how we can use computer to enhance the person. And that's what I think.
Great. Ashley, thoughts on this?
I have very strong opinions on this. In terms of, I hate to disagree, but I do disagree in terms of the question of if an AI can replace your job, were you doing a job in the first place? Because let's look at, for example, the field that I'm sort of in and would like to move into more, was journalism. A lot of copyright in terms of very basic articles, we've seen increasing amounts of AI written articles, and it's nonsense. It's waffle. It's lorem ipsum, basically. But it's replacing the jobs of a lot of junior writers who are getting into a field. And, you know, you have to learn how to write in a particular way. It's an entry-level job. Yes, it's not the most glamorous thing in the world, but what it's being replaced with are articles that are in some cases just wrong, not true. It's information that a machine learning thing has just pulled from somewhere. And because with large language models, it only... You're correct in the sort of assertion that it builds off of what it's fed. It's not an intelligence in the sense that it can really think of things in that way. What you end up with is you have jobs where you have very milquetoast, middle-of-the-road, plain articles that are, you know, it's filler for a newspaper, but it's whatever, being replaced with something that is actively not true or wrong or badly written. So, and the reason that it's done is because it's cheaper for the newspaper, far cheaper to use AI. So the impetus is not, let's see what we can replace with something that's, like, you know, useful, like, structurally in that sense. The impetus, because of what I would say is the capitalistic drive, is, well, let's just replace it with what's cheapest. And people won't notice, because it's filling up a newspaper. You're replacing jobs that are in that sphere, and this is very much, I'm talking about this sphere. In other instances, I know biomedical sciences has a lot of use for generative AI. I've heard that it's very productive in terms of filtering things, but in some spheres, especially the creative sphere, when you're writing dialogue for movie, for video games, for novels in many cases, replacing that with AI is a bad move in every respect, is my perspective.
Yeah.
I don't think I disagree with you, Ashley, but I think that when you're saying, you know, replace, you're making content that you're pushing out content that isn't good, and that content is what is produced by the AI, and that's what I think I mean. It's not at the level yet where you're looking at editorial written by you, Ashley, and then you're reading an editorial written by OpenAI, and we're saying that they're on the same level. And for that reason, I don't think it's at the stage where it should be replacing it. And I think that if we're looking at the OpenAI one and it's better than what you've written, then you need to admit that there's probably something wrong, because if this machine that's just taking loads of information can write an article better than you, I don't think you should be in that job.
Go ahead, Ashley. You were going to say something.
Oh, so I was going to say, I think we're a long ways off it being better, at least in terms of the samples I've seen. I think the idea that even within the next 5-10 years, we will see things that are better is very left of field. It's got a long way to go before it can replace that sort of...
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for this particular case, when we're talking about AI being used for art and for creative endeavors. I see this also coming up a lot in the comic book area. I see it coming up in tabletop gaming, where things like Magic the Gathering and that type of stuff, or Dungeons and Dragons, have been accused of using AI art as opposed to actually employing actual fantasy artists, right? And I think that's where people are like, whoa, 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 what's going on here? Like, these are actual, this is creative work done by human beings, and you're parceling it off into a machine. And unlike your example, actually, like, it's very obvious when you read an article that's written by AI. One of our panelists on our podcast, for fun, will type in the question that we're debating and have an AI written answer, and we'll read it verbatim. And it's always complete hilarious nonsense, to the point that, like, we include it in the show because it's so ridiculous. But when it comes to actual artwork, that is an issue where people, like, sometimes it can pass, and we are taking away jobs from people. So I can understand why artists in particular in this industry are very nervous about allowing any of it to slip through. Even if it is a small independent film like this one is, you want to support small independent works, absolutely. But then if you're a small independent work, you also need to kind of continue with that theme of supporting small independent artists and not employing AI. Erin, anything else to say on that?
Yeah, exactly that. And they had like the filmmakers have come out and spoke about this, and they admitted that they used them, and they were like, they didn't seem at all ashamed about the fact that they used them. Like, they didn't have any like misgivings about it. They're like, we're just playing around with AI. We're just playing around with it. It's not that big a deal, kind of thing. And that bothers me, because then that kind of just says to me, well, you're not realizing how dangerous this could be in the long run, and how many people could lose their jobs. You know, there was a great documentary, I was lucky enough to interview the director, called Americond. And it's all about like capitalism and the dangers of like a lot of our system and jobs. And in there, it's like this statistic that it's like over 50%, I believe, of jobs could be replaced by AI in the future. Like, they could try to do that. And so it's like, this is something that affects everybody. And I think with the art part of it, what you're missing when you use AI is you're missing the humanity and the mm-hmm. empathy and the soul from mm-hmm. an artist. And yeah. so it makes me scared and sad, really. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think that technology is going to continue advancing. Like, Gen AI is not going to be the last technology that we see in this world. And I think that all that needs to happen when that happens is to update the legislation. So if it's getting to a point, as you said, where it's, you know, crossing moral boundaries and people are at risk of losing their jobs, or, you know, reducing the integrity, then I think it's for different industries to change the rules that they're making regarding these certain technologies. But I think that we often focus on, you know, 50% of jobs being replaced by AI, and we don't talk about the horizons that opens in new jobs. And I just imagine, Ashley, as you were talking on the newspaper and pushing that out with really boring news articles that people aren't going to read, if that's done by AI, then how much time would you have to, you know, maybe make the content that is pushing the boundary and is, you know, getting to the people that it needs to get to? So as I said, a bit biased as I work in the space, but I definitely think that we just need to change the legislation about it, have these open conversations, and reduce the fear that I think is being spread regarding AI.
Yeah, I had two final things to kind of wrap this conversation up. Number one, I feel like the bad guy again is capitalism. So that's a recurring theme we're having in this episode. And then number two, I'm just going to put it out there. I welcome our new robot overlords. When and ever you come, I'm here to do your bidding. So there you go. I do want to close out the first half of the show with another kind of weighty political / pop culture topic. But I'm curious for this panel's thoughts. Obviously, the Princess Kate information came out this week. Very sad news about her diagnosis. The part of it that interests me from a pop culture perspective is there were all of these memes that were being made earlier this week and the week before, and all of these people poking fun, including some celebrities like Blake Lively put something up, etc. And I'm curious, especially again from our UK cousins for whom this is, you know, their country, if you have thoughts about, were you disappointed in the way that people reacted to this, and how are you feeling overall for Princess Kate? Ashley, can I start with you?
Sure. So my perspective on this, as someone who has perpetually been very much not a monarchist, cards on the table, have always thought that as an institution, it doesn't make sense in a modern Britain. I understand why people have, we haven't, why we support it, but so my ire at this situation is directed principally at the way the palace handled the situation, because her diagnosis, cancer is something that affects 50% of people in most countries in modern society. My own family, my dad's had a form of cancer, his brother had a form of cancer, my granddad did, my auntie did. So it's something that's very relatable. Many people have dealt with. But because the initial response from the palace was, no, cover everything up, no response, she's fine. It's all fine. Everything's fine because it's the royal family. They can't have problems. They can't have normal people problems. I think part of the reason why people reacted the way they did, which is, by the way, not to say that, like, obviously making memes about someone who has cancer is... gauche does not begin to sort of approach it, but part of the reason I think people reacted the way they did is because the response of, and this is not Kate, this is the palace, is like a sort of broader PR machine. It was to go, no, nothing's wrong, everything's fine, she's fine, because nothing can be wrong with the royal family. They have to be perfect. They have to be, you know, almost magical, fairy tale in that way. And it led to this situation where people then realized, wait a minute, this photo you've released to the public is photoshopped. Why would you release a photoshopped photo? And it led to a weird conspiratorial suspicion that there was something other than it. Whereas if they had just initially said, this is what's happened, she's undergoing treatment, please respect our privacy, I think the response would have been much more broadly, yeah, that's a terrible thing to happen and we hope you get better soon, basically.
Yeah, Faye, I see you nodding along to a lot of that. Do you agree?
I do agree, and I hadn't actually thought about it like that before you said it, Ashley, but I just think it's so tough, and a few of my friends and I were discussing having to deal with cancer, you know, to begin with, and then instead of worrying about getting better, your treatment, your children, you're now having to worry about, you know, what a million strangers are saying on the internet. It is not something that I envy in any way, shape or form. But I think Ashley talking about, you know, how secretive and mistrustful the palace has been does change how I view the situation a little bit, not to do with Kate, but I think that the palace, you know, as we call them, they're just not great, like, in short. And I think that, unfortunately, because of things that have happened in the past, that may be why people aren't able to look at Kate and just see a human being that's just been diagnosed with cancer. They see, you know, people trying to get one up over them. And unfortunately, it's just one of those things that comes with the role of being, you know, an HRH. So it's really, really tough. But I think, above everything, she's a human being, and, you know, just pray that she gets better, because that's not something that I wish on, like, my worst enemy. I think it's something that's very, very hard to deal with, let alone deal with it publicly.
Yeah. Erin, any thoughts from the poor cousins over here in the US? Your opinion?
The poor cousins. I've never been, like, I know a lot of people in the United States and everything are very, very obsessed with the royal family, and it's a huge thing. I never have been personally, but I think this also speaks to our greater obsession with celebrity and with forgetting that those people are people, just like we are people, and forgetting that. And I also think it was very much a distraction from everything else going on. So it was kind of used as a distraction. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, celebrities got on board and were doing the memes and all that. But then I don't know if you saw Jamie Lee Curtis had like an Instagram post and saying, and this was before it was revealed about the cancer diagnosis. And she was like, this is horrible that everybody's speculating mm-hmm. and you're talking about this person like they're not a person. And how horrible that was. Yeah. And I just thought it was interesting to have someone finally speak out and say that, because I do think no matter your feelings on the royal family or anything like that, with celebrities, we tend to forget that celebrities are people too, kind of thing.
100% true. And that's a great place. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back in a little bit, but we will be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome back to Doing the Thing. I'm Eric Resniak from The Great Pop Culture Debate. And again, I'm joined with It's a Fandom Thing's Aaron Marlowe, The Motion's Faye OJ, and Wizard Radio Station's Ashley Styles. We're going to continue this really upbeat topic by talking about another difficult conversation that's happening right now in pop culture, specifically the Nickelodeon kind of reckoning that came out of the Quiet on the Set documentary, which just premiered on Investigation Discovery, I believe. It's also, I think, on HBO Max. And that has also kind of been iterated as well with Jeanette McCurdy's book from last year, I'm Glad My Mom Is Dead, which is one of the all-time great book titles in history, as well as revelations that came out on the Boy Meets World podcast as well. So, Aaron, I know you were very interested in talking about this. Faye, you want to talk about it too. Did you see the Quiet on the Set documentary?
I have not watched the full documentary. I've been watching it in TikTok clips as I watch everything nowadays. But I think I, you know, sort of got the drift and read up on it. And it's just really sad. It's really sad. It's really disappointing. But unfortunately, it's not surprising. And I think as I was watching Nickelodeon, I do remember thinking some of these jokes are a bit inappropriate. But I think you just think they're just before the line. And I think when you realize that the joke are probably the best of everything to come out of it, that it just gets so much worse. It's just really, really sad because these are people that provided entertainment for a global audience. A lot of people owe their childhood to these people, and to think that their childhood was taken away from them, it's tragic.
It really is. Aaron, do you want to walk our listeners through exactly some of, did you watch Quiet on the Set, first of all? Have you seen the whole documentary?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing. Yes.
Do you want to kind of encapsulate what the main issues that were highlighted in it are?
The main issues and some of the stuff that they talk about is very much allegations, and we're not sure on everything that went on. But a lot of what they talked about was the stuff going on and stuff alleged to go on behind the scenes of a lot of the Nickelodeon shows. And so they were talking to a lot of these child actors as grown-ups now, and talking about the pressures of working as a child actor and some of what might have been inappropriate stuff from producer Dan Schneider. And then the big thing they talked about was Drake Bell talked about his abuse that he had received. And if you're going to watch it, make sure to heed the warnings, because it goes into detail about abuse and sexual abuse and very inappropriate behavior. And so talking about that, and also I think it's a look at child stars in general and how child stars are treated in Hollywood and how dangerous it can be sometimes for some of them, and how lonely some of them felt. And also the parents, and talking about the parents, and like Drake Bell's father was very, very worried about Drake Bell. And so talking about that, and then also talking about all of the people that were on the side of the alleged predator as well. So yeah, that's kind of the gist of it, but it's very complex situation, I think. So
it is complex, and there's multiple different instances that they're dealing with. It's not strictly just the Drake Bell situation, which is awful, and he's very candid about it. But there's additionally, one of the things that I thought was very interesting was it peeled back some of the sizeism, some of the racism that was really just very casually going on behind the scenes, allegedly, at these shows. And you have both the child actors themselves as well as their parents coming forward and saying, I saw this happening to my kid. And in some cases, the response was, I thought that this was what was right for their career, so I just kind of went along with it. And as you mentioned, Aaron, it really does, again, put that spotlight. I don't know how many times we have to go through this as a culture until we really fully understand. Like, children in entertainment need such a cocoon around them to even hope that they can escape that without being really deeply traumatized. We're not there yet. We're still not there, I don't think. Ashley, did you have any thoughts about any of this? I know you said you hadn't watched the documentary yet.
No, peripherally aware. It's my main thought is just that it's very sad. I grew up outside of the UK, so Nickelodeon was a lot of like what I watched as a kid. So seeing, you know, all of this stuff come out is tragic. But I would very much agree with your point that for child actors or child singers really in any sort of public role or one where you are sort of positioned in that way requires a hell of a lot of safeguarding to be feasible in that sense. You know, you mentioned that it's so tragic that Drake Bell's father had these worries, but I don't know, obviously the documentary is as to why the sort of situation went ahead anyway, but it's people do have those worries because it's a thing that it happens, and that it happens is known. And yet still, you know, it occurs. So it's just very tragic.
Absolutely. Faye, any other thoughts from you on this situation?
I think just, yeah, a lot of unlearning. As you all were speaking, I was just thinking about how we, the pipeline in which it, you know, was revealed to us. It's like you're a child star, and then you have this moment where you're breaking free, you're a wild child, you're doing like the worst, you're like the worst person in the world. And I think we're now just seeing the foundations of what was presented to us is people rebelling, you know? And that's not what it was at all. Like, they were trapped and they were escaping. Amanda Bynes, Britney Spears, who've just come out of their conservatorships, I think that's the word for it.
Yeah, conservatorship, yeah.
And I remember when Vanessa Hudgens, I think there was a scandal revolving her nude pictures and around the time of High School Musical 2, and how she would have to like apologize, and that's what the focus was, her apologizing, not the fact that someone had leaked into a child at the time, and I don't, 17, but still very young, revealed her pictures, but it's her apologizing. And it is done now, you know. We can't change the past, but I think that we can change the future. And I remember on my podcast, we did an episode called Our Infant Influencers, Glorified Child Laborers. And I think we are seeing the same sort of patterns repeating, but just on a different level, like on a different platform. And I think we really need to be careful and learn from these horrors so that we can, not to even sound cheesy, but to make the world a better place. I think that a lot is being exposed right now, and we can't just let it be, you know, an exposure and then we go back to what we're doing before. Like, let's all, both as consumers and producers of content, act and do better.
I think that's such a great point, and it actually kind of leads directly into my next topic I wanted to discuss, which is Jennifer Lopez, around Valentine's Day, had her big comeback. It was her first new album after a decade. And she did both the album and she had a corresponding Amazon Prime movie that came with it. And it has been a flop. It has not been regarded well critically or commercially. And what I started to see in the past week now is there's a slew of memes coming up that are aggressively bullying towards Jennifer Lopez and basically being like, you're garbage and we never liked you anyway. Why don't you just go away and die? And I feel as though, to what your point was, Faye, we should be better than this at this point in history. You specifically referenced Britney. You specifically referenced Amanda Bynes. And I would hope, I mean, because I was very much aware and around during that 2007, 2008 kind of inflection point where these young stars were, Lindsay Lohan is another, being just destroyed on a daily basis by both the press and social media. And now we're all like, you know what, we probably shouldn't do that. And yet we're doing the exact same thing with Jennifer Lopez, with Kate Middleton. And I'm wondering, at what point do we get it? Do we get the memo that these are human beings and maybe we can be a little kind to them? Ashley, do you have any thoughts about that?
My thoughts are unfortunately slightly pessimistic in this sphere, because I think with the nature of the way celebrity works, it's perceived as a trade-off, essentially. You attain status and money and power and ability, and the exchange is that your life is now public domain. Mm-hmm. And in some instances, if it's a matter of like political authority, more so with regards to like the royal stuff, it's like, well, they don't have political authority per se, but they do have, you know, a vast stipend and vast properties. It's like, well, that's your trade-off. For your average celebrity, it's like, well, no, your life is not yours anymore. You are in the public eye. And it's, you know, in terms of changing that system, I think you would require much broader societal changes, which I think, for the record, should very much be the case. But I think you would need to change a lot about the way that celebrity culture works and has worked since, I guess you would say, the 20s really would be the big turning point when you get silver screen stars and you start getting the development of like the modern paparazzi and stuff. In terms of like how we be better, as it were, I think the obsessive desire to know about these people who are our stars and to scrutinize them in a lot of ways. You know, J-Lo released a bad album. People aren't going to let that go because there is a sort of strange entertainment for people in ridiculing that. And so long as J-Lo continues to be someone who newspapers will sell if you print J-Lo on the cover, that will continue to be the case. And you need to change that incentive.
That's such a great point in that there is a almost carnival-like atmosphere around tearing these people down. Like, as much as we love to build them up, my God, we love to just tell them, oh, you thought you were something, weren't you? But I'm going to tell you exactly what a piece of garbage you are. And I just find that really, it's almost like the Colosseum. You know what I mean? It's just so brutal. Aaron, do you have thoughts about all of this?
I do want to add something a little bit different with the Jennifer Lopez thing, because I do think the other thing with Jennifer Lopez is a lot of people that have worked with her, a lot of people that have like been like servers, a lot of people that have had interactions with her. The big thing on TikTok that you will see right now is a lot of people coming forward with their allegations that she is awful and not good to people. And so there's a part of me that, like, if you're not a good person and you're not treating people well, and if she is, I know they're all, you know, it's all alleged, then I don't have as much empathy for you, to be quite honest. But I do agree that I think we are obsessed with tearing celebrities down and tearing successful people down, especially successful women, Mm-hmm. And then if you add in, if it's a successful woman that is also like, if a successful woman who is, there's a black woman or another person of color or anything, then it even like multiplies tenfold. And then it's like this tearing down. I think it's almost like people feel envious and jealous. And so they're like, I am just going to tear and rip this person apart so I can feel better about myself. I think that's a big part of it too. But you see it, I think, more geared towards female celebrities. I'm not saying it doesn't happen to other celebrities, but I think it's geared more towards female celebrities for sure.
Faye, I see you nodding in agreement. Do you agree?
Yeah, as always. I'm so glad you said that, Erin, firstly, because J-Lo is an interesting one, especially if you're looking at, you know, musical ability. I remember a lot coming out that she didn't even sing some of the songs that we love so much. So, you know, if she is going to release an album that is her voice and we're used to hearing someone else's voice, we're probably not going to like the album. And I think that there's nothing wrong with criticizing someone's art. Like, if you put out a movie and I don't like it, I don't think I should have to censor myself. I think we need to increase the acceptance of differing opinions all across the board. But sure. I think what is wrong is when people start to go, you know, personal, as Erin said, tearing them down. And I don't really understand, because it's not like I'm somewhere that is like, I don't like celebrities, like keep them away from me. I do, you know, invest in the stories, invest in the culture. But I think there's a clear division in my mind that I don't know these people. And if I don't like what you're doing or what you're putting out or who you are as a person, I'm just not going to follow you. And yeah. I find it so confusing that people will actually, you know, go onto Kim Kardashian's Instagram and write hate. Like, it's something that my brain can't even comprehend. And I think something somewhere far back, as Ashley said, went wrong in the way that our brains like react to this. And I don't even think that I am someone that is, you know, the most moral person around. Like, we're not going to get into that, you know, still in therapy. But I think that if I can see something like that and not want to react that way, then I don't understand how no one else can, to be honest.
Yeah, that's such a great point. And my whole thing is like, you could just say nothing. You know what I mean? Like, it costs, yes. It is free to say nothing, have your opinion. But I'm so interested, Ashley, you made the point, like, there has always been the celebrity culture going back to the 20s, at least, right? They had the head of Hoppers of the world writing their gossip columns. They had the big glossy tabloids where you could follow all of the exploits of all these different stars. But I think there was a change, and I don't know if it's – I actually don't think social media was the change. Social media definitely changed the paradigm again by making us able to connect with these celebrities almost on a personal level. Like, they feel like our friends, what they call it, parasocial relationships.
Yeah.
But even before that, in the 90s, I can remember there being a very weird twisting of the way that we covered celebrities that I don't recall being a thing in like the 70s and 80s. And like, I'm old, so I can remember that stuff. But like, there seemed to be a much darker, sinister take on the way that we covered. There was a sensationalism that was really kind of they wallowed in the misery and the dysfunction in their lives. Ashley, do you have any thoughts on that, or am I making stuff up?
No, I think you're onto something, but I think it is older than perhaps one suspects, because if you think about, was a line from Candle in the Wind, the song, you know, about
Marilyn
Monroe, when she died, Marilyn was found in the nude. That was, you know, on all the things. And that was in the 70s, I think Marilyn Monroe died.
60s, or I think.
60s, yeah. So that sort of obsession, especially with like paparazzi stuff, it really, what it needed was an industry that would facilitate it and a media environment that would enable that. I think with the 90s and the switch there, that's like your 24-hour news cycle, your cable news. And that's when you start getting like, not only are we going to talk about these people and their gist, their deal, but we're doing that all the time. You have the constant surveillance, as it were. So in terms of like how that goes, and in terms of like person to person, I think it's different stuff for different celebrities as well. I don't think it's related phenomenons, but I think it's the same phenomenon. Because you take someone like, one weird example that came to my mind was when Jose Canseco, the baseball player, did a Reddit AMA years back. He was absolutely piled on, because it turns out every fan that has ever met him hates the guy. And every person that has ever worked with him hates the guy. He's a real piece of work. And so for some celebrities, you get these instances where everybody suddenly decides, no, actually, you're not very pleasant. We're all going to make that a matter of public knowledge. On the other hand, you have your Britney Spearses, where you have the moments of the Leave Britney Alone guy, one of the most vindicated figures of internet culture.
Chris Crocker.
Because it turns out, actually, yeah, she was in this terrible situation, and perhaps we should have left Britney alone, as it were. But at the time, it was just seen as, you know, well, it's just a bit of fun. Who's this guy getting so, you know, head up about it? And, you know, well, is it that big a deal? You can have the same media piranha frenzy around two totally different people for two totally different reasons that superficially appears the same. It's the dog pile. For the people producing that content, I guess you would call your paparazzi journalists, your TMZs, I guess, if that's still like a thing. In the UK, I guess the equivalent would be like the middle sections of like The Sun or The Express or something like Tabloid Press or, you know, any of those magazines. All that matters is what feeds the content. Doesn't matter if the target is someone who is broadly perceived to be deserving of their ire or someone who is in other ways, completely innocent of it, but has just happened to find themselves in the crosshair. It doesn't matter to the machine.
And once again, I welcome our robot overlords when they come, because I do think that's the solution to all of this.
Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Exactly right. Exactly. Twirling toward freedom. That was a really thoughtful analysis. So thank you very much. As we're wrapping up here, I would love for us to share what we're working on our individual shows and our individual programs. Faye, what's going on with you? What's happening?
So The Motion is currently on a really long hiatus. I think that I just stopped caring about the world. Mm. I found myself coming to the same conclusions, and I couldn't, in good faith, continue to put content out that I didn't feel like I cared about. But I am starting to care again. And so you will see something from me this year. I'm leaving it very open and very vague.
I love that. How can people find you? How can people find your work?
I am on Instagram at FayeOJ, that's FE_OJ, and you should be able to find links to everything else on that page. That's like the main hub.
Great. Thank you very much. Ashley, what are you working on? What's going on in your world?
So most of my stuff is here on Wizard Radio and Wizard Studios more broadly. I do the show that is going to be on directly after this. Ash Stars Live, if you want to hear about current affairs, new stuff from around the world. Go listen to that. In terms of a podcast that I did that is also on hiatus, but we'll see. I sort of ran out of subjects. I sort of limited my scope there a bit, but we'll see. Demystified, it's on Spotify by Wizard Studios as well. That's historical mysteries if you're into that sort of thing. Not true crime, more like disappearing ships and that sort of thing. So go check it out. But that's where you'll find me.
Fascinating. And so the best place to find that is where?
Spotify.
Spotify. Great. Yep. Aaron, you mentioned that you were just recording two episodes last night, I think. What's going on with It's a Fandom Thing?
Well, with It's a Fandom Thing, we just released last week. We're doing our topic month, so we're wrapping that up. And last week we covered fan fiction and do's and don'ts in the fanfic world. And then we're releasing one. Speaking of treating celebrities as people as part of what we talked about, but we're releasing an episode coming up this week talking about conventions, like going to, you know, celebrity conventions and pop culture conventions and the do's and don'ts of that. So that is a big, huge thing for us. It was a long episode that we recorded, longer than some of ours have been recently, but it was a really, really good conversation, I think. So yeah, and you can find us on any podcast platform, and you can follow us at It's a Fandom Thing Pod on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and then at Fandom Thing Pod on Twitter.
Awesome. I will say, speaking of conventions and fan fiction, I was just at AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago and sat in on a fan fiction panel. And I am not a prude by any sense but I sat there and was literally clutching my pearls at the statements that were coming from the podium. And I was like, I don't think I'm old enough to be in this room right now. It was very intense. Is that what you found in your fan fiction discussion?
I actually write fanfic too.
Oh, so. Okay. So you could have been up on that podium making me blush.
Maybe. Yeah, I love fanfic, and I think sometimes you can find better writers in the fanfic world than even some published authors, frankly. But yeah, it's interesting the different tags you find and the different different things that people just push the limits, you know. There's stuff there that for everyone, basically anything you can think of. And I'll just leave it with, if you don't know what the tag dead dove don't eat means, if you're reading fanfic, look it up. But just beware that means all the other tags, they're very, very serious about that. So that was something new I'd learned about, but yeah.
Things that you learn listening to Doing the Thing. That's awesome. I am going to wrap up by asking each of our panelists to tell me about one thing that they're excited about for the next week. I always like to leave things on a positive note. So squeeze your mind grapes to come up with something really exciting for you. It could be pop culture or news. I will say that my podcast, Great Pop Culture Debate, we are editing feverishly for season 9, which will be starting to drop on April 15th. And that's taking up a lot of our time right now. We're also completely rebuilding our website and launching a new website, which makes me want to set myself on fire, but we're going to do it. We're very excited about it. So with that being said, Faye, what are you excited about this week?
Payday! Payday is coming! Q2, we go again. Gotta try and end the quarter, you know, over the budget, not under. So, yeah, very excited. I know we've been talking about capitalism, but hey, you need money to eat, so.
Get those dollars, and I would like to put forward that we call it Fayday, not Payday.
Love that. Think about that. Love okay, that.
We're going to go with it. Ashley, how about you? What are you looking forward to this week?
Well, there's also going to be Payday for me as well this week coming, but I guess if we're talking pop culture, the new Alone in the Dark game came out. I don't know if it's going to be any good, but I've been excited for that IP for a while. I'm also a horror fan, so we'll see. It's got David Harbour in it. I'm tentatively excited.
Yeah, it's a remake, correct, of the original one?
Yes, yeah, of the very original one from the 90s. So they're really just hard resetting because the other ones were not so good. So we'll see if they get it right this time.
Great. And Aaron, what about you? What are you excited about coming out this week?
Well, it's not coming out this week, but I do have to share it just because I'm so excited. So I got a text today from my sister and she's like, I bought us tickets to see the Pixies in concert. And that's one of my favorite bands and I've never seen them in concert. So that's just like what I'm all about right now.
Awesome. And I was talking to you also. I didn't come up with a thing for next week, but I will say that I'm very excited about X-Men 97, which just debuted on Disney Plus this past week. As a Marvel geek and as a 90s teen, it is hitting me right in my nostalgic spots. And if you care about X-Men and comics in any way, I strongly recommend that you check it out. So with that, we're going to wrap things up here. Thank you very much to Ashley, Aaron, and Faye. We already said where our listeners can find you. And remember to catch new episodes of Doing the Thing live on Wizard Radio Station every Sunday from 8 p.m. UK time and on all podcast platforms from Monday morning. We'll see you next week.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.